Welcome back to the Chaos Ball Podcast, the second installment of the week. I promised a double feature this week, and I'm back to look at the opposite of position players, the ones who stand up there on the mound and then hurl baseballs at the catcher. It's the pitching episode of the yearly roundup. What am I calling these? The year in review, the season in review. But for the pitching and the position players, it was a long one. There's quite a bit of position players that play on a team every year. I mean, there's a lot of pitchers, but I'm, you know, going to tell you right now, there's a lot of bullpen pitchers I'm not really going to talk about. I'll probably say their name at the end of the episode, but I'm focusing on the best of the pen and some of the others, and then focusing heavily on the starting pitching because they obviously throw the most innings of the year. And this one's going to, I mean, it's structured a little bit differently. I'm not doing like the good and the mediocre and the bad, because mostly there was good. There was mostly good with the pitching on this team. I'll get into some of the bad, but on the whole, I think you don't need stats to tell you this pitching staff was pretty awesome for the most part for all of this year, especially the starters. They were just awesome to watch, and this episode is going to be a lot of gushing about them, so prepare for that. But I'm just going to get into it. Like I said, you don't have to look at anything stat-wise to confirm that this pitching staff was great this year. Everyone kind of knew that. They were consistently just so solid all season. Obviously not really the reason they missed a playoff, so starters especially. I'd say the bullpen, probably there's a little bit to blame for the bullpen, but on the whole, the lack of offensive production for most of the year is what sunk this ship. The starters too, just specifically, were so consistently healthy, with the exception of Brian Wu, who was, you know, I'll talk about him more specifically, but like, if then in this day and age, four of your starters being this healthy is kind of insane. Like, Luis Castillo was hurt in September briefly, but he still ended up with just a lot of innings on the whole. I think he missed like 3 weeks at the end of the year, so that's basically a full season. Starting unit was far from the reason they missed the playoffs. Like, they really, like I said, they were quite the opposite. They were keeping this team in contention for most of the year. It's just enjoyed watching the hell out of them all year. And the best thing about this organization and the starting staff, like right now, is just how much they have adopted and implemented the modern way of pitching. Like, all of these guys have both the talent and clearly the curiosity and intelligence to want to tweak their stuff like constantly. And the organization seems very well suited and set up correctly to help them do that effectively, and also just maybe tell them to do it, like in the offseason. I think the starters and the relievers to a lesser extent, but the starters especially, have just shown like, hey, I'll do this, I'll do that, I'll try it. Like, they'll try anything once. And I think just the organization and the pitching apparatus they have built is so supportive of that, and also so effective at guiding them to the right endpoint. Like, all of them seemingly are always just thinking about like their pitch shapes, and how the ball comes out of their hand and what they could do differently. And they all have the confidence also to tweak things and to just try stuff out. All of these dudes, the starters at least, looked a little different from last season to this season, and they'll probably look different again next year. I think it's kind of just how pitching works, especially in the modern game. Guys are constantly looking at numbers and looking at how to optimize their arsenal, their delivery, their pitch shapes, all that. So I think the tools available to pitchers these days give them those opportunities too, like to just take a look at everything, what they're doing, and trying to improve even the little minutiae of stuff they can do. That is, like, obviously this organization's core competency is the pitching lab and just like the development and coaching at all the levels. But I think you also need the right guys, obviously. All five starters too are pretty young. I mean, Luis Castillo is the older vet, but he's 32. It's not like he's 37. He's not, like, he's old compared to these other guys, but he's not that old. And he doesn't seem, like, stuck in his ways. He's changed plenty of things as he's aged and came over to the Mariners. And I think he'll have to continue to try to evolve as he gets older and as he's kind of losing some of his zip. But all four of the other guys are so young. George Kirby and Logan Gilbert. Logan Gilbert's definitely in his prime. Kirby is probably right there. And then Bryce and Brian are just like coming off really nice sophomore seasons and probably entering a prime right now as they go into both their third years at age, what, I think Brian will be 25 next year and Bryce will be 26. So just excited. And then I'm gonna dig into their numbers overall of just kind of the whole starting staff and then also just the entire pitching staff in general, roping in some of the team stats that includes the reliever stuff. It's going to be also just important to look at them through the lens of like where they start half their games at T-Mobile Park. That's important. I'll talk about that later. But I'm just going to get going. I'll start with the workload. This was one of the things. This was one of the things that was so impressive and important this year. A lot, like you see, I think there were the most Tommy John surgeries this year in the history of the sport, and they've been increasing every year. We saw how many starters went down. We saw teams having to start a bunch of random guys, and the Mariners only ended up starting 7 total pitchers this year because their starters were just super healthy, and they only ended up like, there were 2 starters besides the main 5 who made starts. Emerson Hancock made 12, and Jonathan Diaz made 1. Every other start was their top 5 guys. That is, like, honestly unheard of in today's game. Like, a lot of teams don't have 3 starters who will make that many starts and who are as effective as these guys. I mean, there's a 4 and 5 going into next year, if we're assuming, and we should assume, hopefully, that Brian was healthy going into next year. So that the workload aspect is super important. And they had 4 starters in the top 50 of innings pitched for their teams this season. Tied for the first. That's tied for first. No team had 5, but 4 teams had 4. The Mariners included, and then the Royals, the Astros, and the Blue Jays as well. Then if you narrow that down to just the top 35 in innings pitched, the Mariners were the only team with 4 starting pitchers in that top 35 of innings pitched for their team. All just kind of workhorses this year, led by Logan Gilbert, who led the league in innings this year, as you probably know. And then not only did they throw a lot of innings, they were consistently effective, just game in, game out. They led the league in quality starts this year with 92. The next closest was the Phillies with 80, so really not close, like 12 quality starts of difference. There's a lot of quality starts, and that is insane. That's insanely impressive. And then you just dig into the ERA of, let's look at just qualified starting pitcher ERA. The Mariners had 4 starters in the top 50 of ERA among qualified pitchers. The Royals and the Astros are the only other teams with 4. Once again, if I narrow this search down to the top 30 ERA among starting pitchers qualified, the Mariners are the only team with 4 on that list. If we look at just overall team ERA, which is a good stat, not a perfect one, but just like perfect indicator of how good a team's pitching was on the whole, they were first with a team ERA of 3.49. Now, wouldn't be doing my job correctly if I didn't also mention an ERA minus number here, which is park adjusted and set against league average being 100, and the lower the better here. This is the Fangraphs ERA park adjusted number. Baseball Reference is ERA plus. Same thing, same concept, but with ERA minus, lower than 100 is better. Their team ERA minus was 92, which was 6th overall in the league. So if you adjust a little bit for T-Mobile, they weren't out and out the best ERA team in the league, but that is somewhat expected. I think raw ERA, the Mariners should be, if the Mariners are contending in their history at all, they should be first in ERA like almost every year just based on where they play ball. Like, it's kind of like if the Rockies were a, I don't know how to say this. If the Rockies were a competent, up-to-date organization, they should be probably first or second in like runs scored every year. Like them or like the Reds maybe with their ballpark, but that's just kind of how this should go, and the Mariners have done that, which credit to them. It's not like it's a given that they're like this. But it's good and should be expected with the talent that they're first in the ERA. Their team FIP, fielding independent pitching, which, I mean, I feel like I don't need to explain what FIP is to the listeners of the show. I've done it before, and I feel like you guys understand what it is. Was 3.73, which was third in the league, and their FIP minus, same thing as the ERA minus, was 94, seventh in the league. So their floor basically was a top 10 team in the league overall, pitching-wise, not even just starters. But realistically, as a whole, this was like a top 5, probably top 3, complete pitching staff in the league this year. Their team starter ERA was first at 3.38. Their team starter ERA minus was 89, tied for third in Major League Baseball with the Boston Red Sox. Their starter FIP was 3.64, which was third in the league. And their starter FIP minus was 92, fourth in the league. And then if you just jump to the bullpen real quick, their bullpen ERA was 3.71. That was good for ninth in the league. Their bullpen FIP was 3.91. And their FIP minus was 99, which was 20th. So their FIP minus in the bullpen was basically league average, which has just kind of been not what we've been used to in recent years. This was their second lowest team ERA in franchise history, only second to 2014, which was 3.17 in 2014, which is insane. That is a crazy low ERA. And other factors, like obviously going to ERA, especially like when you look at it historically, offensive environments always change. They're ever changing. But 2014 still, regardless, was an awesome pitching staff. And this year was a also historically good pitching staff, especially in the context of the Seattle Mariners franchise. And just a reminder, the league average ERA this year was 4.08. So that's good to keep in the back of your mind here for the rest of this episode. Let's look at strikeout to walk ratio, because this is also a core competency of this starting staff, is really limiting base runners. They, among top 50 qualified starters, I mean, can you guess what I'm about to say? Only Seattle and the Kansas City Royals had 4 starters in the top 50 of strikeout to walk ratio, qualified starters, that is. All 4 of those Mariners starters were in the top 25 in Major League Baseball, and no other team can say that. Their total starter strikeout to walk ratio was first, I know, shocking, at 3.84 strikeouts per walk. And that number is the highest strikeout to walk ratio in franchise history. Last year was second highest in franchise history. So this is just part of the identity of this starting staff. And that number was also 5th highest in the wild card era, which is sweet. And if even if you like look at even if you look at like if that same stat in the live ball era or something, I think the Mariners are still like 6th in that, or probably even still 5th, because most of the highest strikeout to walk ratios have come in the 21st century, just with the nature of how strikeouts have been. So it's like gotta, you know, add that little factor in there. But still, this team just limits walks super well. A peak at their like hard hit rate percentage as a team, they were 2nd overall in baseball, only giving up a 29.4 hard hit percentage, which is great. Batted ball profile actually is super similar to their lineup. They don't get like a ton of ground balls as an entire team. They get a lot more fly balls. And their fly ball percentage as a team staff was 40.8%. That was 3rd in baseball. They give up the 5th lowest line drives in the league. That just plays super well into the ballpark, because they'll get zapped by a home run or two at home, but largely they don't get hit super hard. They give up a lot of fly balls. That's a lot of outs. That is a lot of outs. So, man, the starting staff, phenomenal, just great all year. And the bullpen, it was a good pen. It was a good bullpen. But I talked about why, since they weren't perfect, like that lost them a decent amount of games this year that probably shouldn't have, if the offense was better and if the bullpen was like a top three bullpen in baseball, top five, like we've been kind of more used to. And then the elephant in the room, is it an elephant in the room? I don't think so. But a lot of people towards the end of the season were pointing to, and this was in regards to the starting rotation, they were pointing to like the home and away splits of the starters as a way of kind of tearing down the best rotation in baseball claim, one of the best rotations of all time claim. I think there is merit to, for sure there's merit to looking at the home and away stuff. That is a important contextual element to analyzing how truly good your pitchers are. And that is also, I mean, that's why I mentioned and referenced, and I kind of always do whenever I'm talking about pitching, is the ERA minus and FIP minus stats and the plus stats as well. Like, it's important to contextualize the raw ERA and FIP numbers with the rest of the league and factor in the park. I think just to kind of get a sense of truly, like, true talent, how good they are. Since they pitch half the time at T-Mobile Park, it's obvious that they will always probably have slightly less impressive league and park-adjusted stats like that. But you saw how even when we brought in those stats, it was still a really good rotation, especially considering how many innings they threw. Like, maybe they weren't the number one ERA minus or FIP minus team, but when you factor in how many innings they threw at those rate stats, it factors into, yes, they were the best rotation in baseball this year. And you factor in a lot of other stuff too. It's less of a headache for the coaching staff and the front office to figure out where they're going to get these starts from. If you have four guys who are week in, week out making their starts completely healthy, it allows you to use your resources better at the trade deadline, because maybe you don't need to trade for a rental starter if you have a great rotation who's constantly healthy. Like, so much more stuff goes into it than just the actual raw stats of the pitching staff. And I think when you round up everything, this was the best rotation in baseball and a phenomenal rotation in the history of the sport. But you know what else is important? The reality is that they do pitch in Seattle. Like, it's not like it's a hypothetical, like, if they pitch all their games in Seattle. No, they pitch half the games in Seattle. That's important. Bringing in the home and away splits is fine. But the fact of the matter is that they do pitch a lot in a great ballpark for pitching. And so it makes sense that their numbers are at home are better than on the road. They should be better at home. It's not some, like, gotcha of the pitching staff that they have worse numbers on the road. They have, these players specifically, they don't have any control of what team they're on. They're pitching in Seattle, and I'm sure enjoying it. And they're also playing to the ballpark's strengths, and I don't see a problem with that. That's actually a very good thing. The, quote, best rotation in baseball includes where they pitch. And this is the best staff in baseball, mostly because of how talented they are, but also partially because their home ballpark is in Seattle. Like, that just matters. It's why, like, I'll bring the Rockies into this again. The Rockies could simultaneously build the best offense in baseball without being first or even second or third or fourth in, like, WRC plus and OPS plus. It matters where they play ball. And, like, looking at the overall identity of this starting rotation, the home and away splits make even more sense given just how they operate. They attack hitters with a lot of fastballs. They stay in the starters specifically. They attack hitters with a lot of fastballs. They stay in the zone and limit walks super well. They're not a particularly elite, like, strikeout or whiff staff. They're above average in strikeouts for sure, but they're not elite. Limiting base runners and relying more on batted ball quality in Seattle makes a lot more sense. Obviously, it'd be great if they were all striking out 30% of the guys they face, but that's just not the reality that you're going to build a staff like that. So their identity of a lot of soft contact, more fly balls, works super well in Seattle, and also just not giving up free base runners. That is a huge part of it. They don't have to strike out a lot of guys because they can afford not to. They can afford to let their stuff play in the zone more at home and rely on the environment and solid defense behind them to take care of the batted balls. I mentioned they were super good at limiting hard contact, and it goes hand in hand with those home numbers and why they're so great, right? That is one thing, that was a very long form answer, so it makes sense it doesn't come up on Twitter a whole lot, but that's something I don't really see many people, if anyone, bringing up when they talk about the home and away splits of the staff. I'm sure the pitching strategy, if this was the same team, same front office and everything, if they pitched in Cincinnati, if this was a ballpark in Cincinnati, I bet the strategy and the pitching would be different. I bet they'd try to get a lot more ground balls and not live in the zone quite as much and be okay with giving up a couple more walks, maybe try to strike more guys out, live outside of the zone down to get more ground balls, not give up home runs in the most home run happy ballpark in the league. You get my point. Like, it goes into the strategy, and it goes all the way down to like the pitch types of these guys. Like, it goes down to the arsenals of the rotation. I'm sure they'd be a lot more like sinker, changeup, vertical curveball, like more splitter than we've even seen them throw recently if they pitched in Cincinnati, but they pitch in Seattle, so they throw a lot of four-seam fastballs and gyro sliders, and that just makes sense to form your starting staff identity to the ballpark, and I think they've done that super well, and I don't think that is something, it isn't something that like the home away ERA splits, just ERA, can really tell you if you don't watch the team pitch. So I said my piece with the home and away stuff, and now I'll just get into the individuals. Also, could the batter's eye be helping the pitchers a little bit? Maybe. Could totally be that, but that's the reality of where they pitch. So I'm going to get the individual looks now of the starting pitchers and then move to the pen later as a normal baseball game goes. I'm not going to run an opener here on this podcast. I'm going to go conventional. I'm going to try to get six, maybe even seven with this Mariners pitching staff out of these guys and then go to the pen. So without further ado, of course, who, like with the position players, I started with Cal Raleigh. Who do you think I'm going to start with this podcast? Of course, it's the tall, thin man, Logan Gilbert, a.k.a. Walter. What a year. I mean, he's got a special place in my heart, I'm sure, and a lot of fans like yourself. Because he was the first of this crop of starters to pitch for the Mariners, including Luis Castillo. Obviously, he didn't arrive till 2022. He was one of the first DePoto draft picks, like high draft picks, to make his debut. Similar to Cal Raleigh, he kind of marks the inception of this core that they've built and we've seen blossom in recent years. So to see him go out there all year and shove every fifth day was just amazing. All he's done in his career so far is get better year over year. And this was the best we've seen from him yet. If it wasn't for Derek Skubal, there'd be a very good conversation about him receiving a lot of first place Cy Young votes. I'm intrigued to see how many top 10 votes he does end up getting. Should be plenty, but Skubal's going to probably win that unanimously. So his raw stats, real impressive. And with all these guys, I'm going to get into just what their raw stats looked like. Some advanced stats, but then mainly I'm going to do raw stats and where they ended up in accordance to the league for some of these guys, and then like their arsenal and get into more like their kind of stat cast stuff and what their what pitches they're throwing, how did they get this stuff done this year. So Logan Gilbert, he made 33 starts this year, tied for the league lead with like 10 other dudes, but he led the league in innings pitched, like I said, with 208 and two-thirds innings. That, especially in today's game, is so many innings. Like, that is probably, this probably could be that meme if Felix Hernandez had a 208 and two-thirds inning season in his prime, his average would have went down. But it's different era, so 208 is a lot. 220 strikeouts, sixth in baseball, and he, that goes along with a 3.23 ERA, a 3.27 FIP. And for the rest of these starters, I'm not going to mention this number, but it's just perfect with this guy. 3.19 Sierra. His ERA, his FIP, and his Sierra were all within 0.4 of each other. Or 0.8, I guess. They're all within 0.8, which is just beautiful. That means there's no fluke in this season. Everything lined up. His batted ball quality was great. The stuff he could control was great. He didn't get super unlucky or super lucky. He earned the hell out of that 3.23 ERA, which is amazing. He also had a .887 whip, which led the league as well. Super impressive. I mentioned it before, but I feel like he's flown under the radar a little bit as a really good, like, strikeout-to-walk ratio guy, and it's because George Kirby is on the staff. And I feel like Logan has flown under the radar as, like, a premier guy who just doesn't walk people. So his 220 strikeouts as well, I forgot to mention, 13th best tally in franchise history for a single season. There's a couple dudes above him with a bunch of seasons. I think Mark Langston has one, and then the rest are either Randy Johnson or Felix Hernandez with those other seasons above 220 strikeouts. Those guys, pretty decent pitchers, I'd say. But Logan struck out 27.4% of the batters he faced this year. That is 11th among quality starters in Major League Baseball. He only walked 4.6 of the batters he faced, which was tied with Tarek Skubal for 5th lowest in baseball. And he amassed 4.1 Fangraphs WAR and 2.8 Baseball Reference WAR. That is 10th and 41st in baseball, respectively, among starting pitchers. And before I go any farther, I've said this many times before, but I'll say it again, because it's very important for this podcast and for anyone who hasn't heard me say this, which is entirely possible you're listening to this and haven't heard me say this before. The WAR calculations for pitching. Baseball Reference WAR uses runs allowed per nine to make this calculation for pitchers, and Fangraphs uses FIP, fielding independent pitching. So pitchers like Logan Gilbert and George Kirby, who are both really, really good at controlling strikeouts, walks, and home runs, which is the main basis for how FIP is calculated, they'll usually and probably always have a higher Fangraphs WAR than Baseball Reference WAR. I actually prefer Baseball Reference WAR for pitchers and Fangraphs WAR for hitters, to be honest. I think FIP is a super useful stat as a predictor during the season. If a guy might, you know, have a really low ERA, high FIP, there's an easy way to say, like, hey, he's probably going to give up more runs soon, or vice versa. And I also think it's just a good basis, FIP is, to make projections for, like, next season. So, but when talking about awards and evaluating what actually happened during the season, I think Baseball Reference WAR for pitchers makes more sense in my eyes. Like, I don't know if F4 should really be used as an argument for, like, a Cy Young, you know, because while it's important to know this guy was really good at what he could control, the fact of the matter is he plays a sport that's really stupid and has a lot of luck involved, and there's luck that goes into every outcome. And there's plenty of luck that goes into guys who win the Cy Young with a crazy low ERA, you know, but that it happens. It happens, and it just, that's just part of the game. So that's my little spiel on the different WAR calculations. Back to Logan Gilbert, who at one point in this season, I called him a Clydesdale horse. Like, he's just an absolute stallion of the pitching staff. Definitely the best starter this season for the Mariners, one of the best starters in baseball. How'd he do it? Well, he continued his trend this season, and it's been happening since he debuted. He decreased his fastball usage and increased his slider usage this year. He decreased that four-seam usage has been decreasing since he debuted. He threw it like 60% when he debuted. It's been going down ever since. He basically threw the same amount of the four-seam and his slider this year. Both were super effective. He threw his slider about 32% of the time and his four-seam about 30.8% of the time. The slider got a lot more vertical movement on it this year than last year. It dipped a lot more. So more gyroed, more of a gyro slider than a traditional slider, just a lot more downward movement. It works super well, like going off his fastball and his new cutter. I think all three of those pitches work really well together. He continued throwing the splitter around the same amount as last year, and that was super effective. His curveball was very improved this year. This was the biggest kind of change in pitching shape of any of his pitches. It was pretty different. It was way closer to a sweeper this season than like a traditional curveball. A lot more horizontal movement to the glove side than vertical movement, and that proved way more effective for him. And then the new pitch this year was the cutter. He threw it a lot early on in the season and then threw it less and less as the year went on. I do love that he has it in his arsenal. I've talked about it. I talked about it this season. It just provides something slightly different than all of his other pitches, and I'm a fan of the cutter for a right-handed pitcher who also has like a fastball like his and a gyro slider, because the cutter is just kind of a perfect little mix right in between those. So it just gives guys a little bit of an extra look there. And then he continued. He's so tall, and he's so close to the plate when he releases his pitches. He was still in the 100th percentile in extension this year, so the pitchers just get up on you. Like, he averages like almost 97 on his fastball, but that thing is effectively a triple digit fastball when you factor in how close he releases it to the plate. And like last year, he was just so consistent. I think last year in the season recap, I called him the team's most consistent pitcher, and he basically did the same thing this year. His ERA never got higher than 3.33, and it sat between 2.7 and 3.3 for like most of the season after April, basically, after like we kind of got past the super small sample size of April. That's insane. That's awesome. Like, what a year. I can't, like, Kyle Raleigh, I just can't talk enough about how awesome his season was. Just phenomenal. I could keep talking about this lovely man, but I got to get to the other pitchers, and we'll talk about George Kirby next. George Kirby, a fine year for George. A FIP darling, this guy is. He had a good year. I talked about the concern before the season a little bit about him maybe living too much in the zone, despite that being kind of his thing. And that kind of bit him in the ass a few times this season. But the overall body of work ended up being, once again, great, great year, great pitching year. He had two starts in particular where he got hit around the park a lot. And that concern of kind of living in too much in the zone got him, zapped him. The start in April against the Guardians where he gave up 8 earned runs on 10 hits and 3 2/3 innings. Then the other one was the start against the Tigers in August, which kind of spurned the Tigers' run to the playoffs a little bit. But he gave up 6 earned runs on 21 hits with 11 runs given up. Wait, hold up. I wrote down 21 hits. There's no chance that it could be 21 hits, right? I'm talking slow because I'm pulling up Baseball Reference right now. Yeah, no, 12 hits. Obviously not 21, but 6 earned runs, 11 runs, 12 hits, and 3 2/3 innings. Those were the two starts. Bad. Very bad. There was all over his fastball. Other than those, he didn't have any other start where he gave up more than 5 runs. He had like 3 or 4 outings where he gave up 5, but other than that, there was no start where he gave up 6 or more after those two. And then those were the only starts he gave up double-digit hits as well. But both of those starts happened. Like, you can't take those out of the calculations. Those are a real thing that happened. So, but I love watching George pitch. I just really love watching him pitch. The way he just dots the edges of the strike zone is just art, you know? Like, there's really not a better way to describe it other than art. Let's get into his stats. He also made 33 starts. Like Logan, same amount of starts, threw 191 innings, 179 strikeouts. That is just a very solid baseline for this man. And that 191 inning mark barely topped his last year mark of 190 and 2/3. So he threw a third more of an inning this year with 2 more starts and almost the same ERA. He's been quite consistent throughout his career. Difference this year is a little bit higher of an ERA, and the league average ERA went down, so his ERA plus was only 104 this year compared to 118 last year, but still, overall, solid year. He led the league with a 7.78 strikeout-to-walk ratio. That's just his thing. He only walked 3% of the batters he faced. That also led the league. He put up 4.2 Fangraphs WAR and 1.9 Baseball Reference WAR this year, 9th and 89th, respectively, among qualified starting pitchers. That's a huge gap. And it comes down to what I mentioned before, just how those are calculated. I'm like fascinated at the end of his career to see how different those war calculations end up being, because FIP and F4 is going to love him constantly. Unless he completely gives up not walking guys, it's gonna love him for his career. And Baseball Reference War will probably likely always underrate his greatest skill for his career. So there's a happy medium in there, but that is a huge gap. Like Logan, he threw his fastball less, but he increased his sinker and slider usage slightly this year. He threw a lot more splitters this year as well, less curveballs. He threw one less knuckleball than last year, which was disappointing. He only threw one this year, which is lame. Throw more. Like, I want one per month. You know, give me between 6 and 12 knuckleballs a year just to mix things up, because I don't think anyone would swing at it. Like, I can't imagine someone would swing at it. It would take someone off guard completely. But his sinker was a really great called strike pitch this year. But when it got hit pretty hard. So when he is, like, front-dooring that two-seamer to a lefty, it is lovely. But if that touches too much of the zone, it got hit pretty hard this year. So there's that. Good thing he doesn't miss a spot too badly when he throws that pitch. The thing I already mentioned before about George, and he needs to improve upon, is just throwing less strikes. Genuinely, like, rely a little bit more on hitters chasing. Because his chase rate was good this year. His chase rate was really solid. I think he just needs to rely on that a little bit more. Like, hitters didn't make, like, a whole lot of contact on those chases, too. So when hitters were chasing, they also didn't make a whole lot of contact. So he was getting more whiffs out of the zone. He just doesn't live out of the zone much, so, like, his overall numbers in that department don't look great. So I think that is something he could improve on. Like, what do I know? He knows a lot more than me. But I know he can do that, too. Like, if he wants to do it, he can do it. He has elite command. If he makes the decision with the team or by himself to throw farther out of the strike zone more often, I'm pretty damn confident he can do that. And I'm also confident Cal Raleigh can call a solid game for him like that. His season, it felt a lot more inconsistent than we expected. Absolutely more inconsistent than Logan Gilbert. There were just a few too many starts where he didn't have his best stuff and it was just getting knocked around. But overall, still another great season. I think he is just he's a guy who could get a little lucky with his batted balls and post like a 2.5 ERA season and walk no one and post like 6.5 Fangraphs WAR and win the Cy Young. Like, I think he absolutely has that in him and has that ceiling, because it's not too often a guy has elite command like this. Like, he has maybe the most talented tool in the starting pitching realm, just with the amount of command that he has. And it's not too often we see a guy with this great of stuff with this good of command. It's just a really unique combo. And he hasn't quite went nuclear yet. A lot of people thought, including myself, it could have been this year. But it could be next year. But 3.53 ERA is nothing to slouch at. So it's not like he had a bad year. But we'll move on. I will talk. Who should I talk about? I will talk about Luis Castillo. And then we'll get to the B-boys after that. Bryce and Brian. Looking at Luis Castillo's years 22, 23, and 24, there is a clear aging curve going on with Luis Castillo. And that's not at all surprising. He is about to turn 32. And he's, at this point, I think this was his 10th year, so a decade-long MLB veteran. Next season will be his 11th year. So, again, it's not like he's like 37, but he's been doing this a long time, throwing really hard. And I think we're just seeing a lot more guys break down earlier because of that. But I did, you know, the key word is aging curve. He is not, it's not an aging cliff, not an aging abyss. It's curve, and he's clearly on it, but still had a good year. Very productive year. Fairly modest stats for him, but still a very productive year for most. He threw 175 and one-third innings with a 3.64 ERA and a 3.91 FIP. That is only a 101 ERA plus, so right around league average when adjusted for park factor. 1.169 WHIP, which is the highest it's been since joining the Mariners in 2022. There's plenty of other stuff to dig in here, but I think the main thing for him was just like diminished stuff as he's aged, I think. He got zapped by the home run ball again this year, 1.3 home runs per nine, which is identical to last year's. Pretty high number, though. His K percentage of 24.3 was the lowest it has been since 2018, which was his first full season pitching in Major League Baseball. For context, in 2023, he had a 27.3% K, and in 2022, he had a 29%. So, just consistently have gone down. Still solid chase rate numbers from him, but the whiff rate this year took a big dip. Put up 2.3 Fangraphs WAR and 1.8 Baseball Reference WAR. Fifth, again, fine year. He was definitely a member of the rotation, or the member of the rotation that changed his stuff the least compared to last season in terms of his arsenal and such and such. Still, he relied heavily on his 4-seam fastball, as he has since joining the Mariners. Once again, it was still an elite pitch this year. Despite the velocity dip, it had an 18 run value, according to Baseball Savant, which is tied for 11th in baseball among all pitchers. And that includes relief pitchers, who notably have pretty damn good 4-seam fastballs. He still gets pretty damn good ride on that pitch and plenty of arm side movement because his delivery just makes it. I think his delivery and arm angle just kind of make it still a formidable pitch despite the diminished velocity. Still almost averaging 96 on it, almost. But his slider was great again this year. Both the slider and the four-seam usage and effectiveness were pretty similar to 2023. His sinker and changeup were not quite as effective this season, though. What was also interesting is his arm angle. His arm slot took a dip this year a little bit. He's more sidearm this year and right now than he ever has been before. I think his aging really is just kind of what explains the season for him. I don't think it's rocket science. His average 4-seam fastball velocity from 2022 to 2023 to this season has decreased from 97.1 in 2022. 96.3 last year to 95.6 this year. So steadily just going down. When I talk about the aging curve, that is it right there. And that, I think, just kind of tells the story of his season this year. Like, he's a pitcher that has relied on his stuff playing really well no matter where he throws it. And as he's aged and thrown more fastballs, he's giving up like more and more hard contact. But usually, like in the past couple of years, especially in 2022 and to an extent last year, he was able to absorb that a little bit. He was able to afford to give up a little bit more hard hit and like barrels and stuff like that because of his strikeout and whiff numbers. This season was really the first year that the whiff rate looked like league average, essentially. And it was pretty reflective as well in just like the contact quality. He was giving up pretty hard contact and not getting as much whiff, and that is not like an ideal situation. Despite that, still, again, put up a pretty good year. But like in the past too, when he's made a mistake pitch, which he often does because he's just a little bit more wild than the rest of the staff, he's often effectively wild. Shout out to that podcast. But he's honestly, like, if he doesn't know where the ball's going, that's not necessarily the worst thing in the world sometimes for him, with just how good his stuff is. Because it was so good that he could get away with an accidental fastball or sinker that touches too much of the plate. But now that the stuff is diminishing and the velocity is decreasing, he can't really get away with those quite as much. He can't quite blow guys away quite as much with his fastball in the zone as he could in years past. When he ramps up that fastball to the top of the zone, it's still really tough to hit. He can go low and away, or high and away, I mean, to left-handed hitters, and that's kind of where his fastball goes with the arm side run on it. or high and right-hand hitters, which is a little bit dangerous for, you know, hitting them in the hands and stuff like that. But when he locates his fastball, he's still a really good pitcher because he still has a good slider to go along with it. And there's just enough going on still with the fastball, even with the velocity decrease, that his fastball is good. It's just, I think the mistake pitches haunt him more now and did this year, did last year compared to 2022 and years prior. So I'm interested to see, like, this offseason, if he makes any significant changes to his pitch arsenal, to, like, any pitch shapes, to his release point. I'm intrigued to see what he does, or if he just kind of sticks with his norm heading into 2025 and hopes he can put up at least, like, closer to league average numbers like this year. I mean, a 3.64 ERA is good still. Like, I'll take that next year. That is not a bad ERA. That's a very good ERA. It's just the whiff numbers, the fastball velocity is... It's warning signs of a guy who's going to enter his, I think, age 33 season next year. Luckily, the Mariners have some pretty decent starters around him, so they're not quite as reliant on Luis Castillo as maybe we thought they were going to be for in 2025 after they traded for him in 2022, thankfully. But I'm intrigued to see if he does anything this offseason that notifies, like, he's trying to age more gracefully than maybe we think he's going to. So we'll see. Still very good year. Still really enjoyed watching him pitch. When he's dealing, he is still so fun to watch. He's an elite watch still when he's dealing. Not only does he do his little fist thing, the way he spins off the mound is awesome, but just when he's, like, ramping up his fastball, climbing the ladder, getting that biting slider, like, low and away to right-handed hitters, it's really fun to watch still. But when he doesn't have it, it's like, oh God, he might hit three guys, give up a grand slam. Like, he's just kind of, when he's there, he's there. When he's not, you know, it can get a little dicey, but still really, really still an effective pitcher this year. So, but we'll move on to talking now about the Bees, Bryce Miller and Brian Wu. I'll start with Bryce Miller though. Big text, Bryce Miller. What a year. What a year it was for Bryce Miller. I think his three-month stretch to end the season was maybe my favorite portion of the year, just, like, watching him cook up there. I couldn't be more excited to see what he does in 2025, because he was, I mean, listen, the peripheral stats weren't quite this good, but after he added that knuckle curve, he was top five pitcher in baseball, and at least in terms of ERA and like F4 over that time, he was an animal, and he debuted that on June 29th, that pitch. But I'll get to his arsenal in a second, but when he added that pitch, he was throwing 7 or 8 pitches per start after that. It was awesome. But overall, his year, he threw 180 and a third innings, 50 more than last season, finished with a 2.94 ERA and a 3.58 FIP. God, yeah. 0.976 whip as well. He struck out 24.3% of the batters he faced, walked 6.4, set career highs for basically every stat this season. Just threw a lot more volume than last year, obviously, so that's going to happen. But his rate stats, too, were all, you know, better than last season, so great sophomore season from him. Took the step forward that I think everyone expected. Maybe not to this extent, maybe not 2.94 ERA, but definitely took a step forward like he should have, and he totally did. Put up 2.8 F4 and 3.4 baseball reference WAR. So BREF liked him a little bit more than Fangraphs, and that is because he probably got a little lucky with bad at balls. But his arsenal, it just went through a lovely makeover from his rookie season to his sophomore season and mid this season, as I mentioned. Last season, we saw, like, right when he debuted, and we were told this, and minor league evaluators had said this, and so, we saw how special his fastball was, and he kind of did what Logan Gilbert did. He relied so heavily on that fastball. Threw it less this year, and I imagine he'll probably throw it a little bit less next year, too, going along that track that, like, Kirby was on, and Logan was on as well, just not relying as heavily on the four-seamer, but still a great four-seamer. But in his rookie year, it felt like guys sat on that pitch after his first couple starts because he was throwing it just so much. And as he threw it, as he kept throwing it, I feel like its value definitely diminished as the season went on. But this season relied less on that, throwing it 42% of the time, which is still a lot, but he threw 58% of the time his rookie year. And it was a phenomenal pitch this year. It was super effective. He just gets so much ride on it, so much backspin with the way it comes off his hand, and it just gets on hitters. And when he's locating it at the top of the zone, it's so difficult to hit. And then the rest was arsenal. He threw 10% sinkers this year as well, and that ended up being a great pitch for called strikes. Didn't get really many whiffs on that. When guys were swinging, they were making contact, but it was a good pitch to throw in 10% of the time as just kind of a, I don't know about get me over, but just a little strike pitch here and there. Even called strikes if he dotted up on the corner. And then the splitter. Oh, the beautiful splitter. I've talked about it. I talked about it this year after he started throwing it early on. Again, following kind of the Logan Gilbert, George Kirby, like, hey, we're just going to add a splitter. Sure. Why shouldn't Bryce Miller add a splitter? He was a good candidate for it, for sure. It was an awesome pitch. It was super effective. Works really well, like, off of his four-seam fastball, especially with his delivery and his arm slot. Just works super well. And talked about it during the year, but it's a splitter where a lot of splitters run for right-handed pitching. They run to the arm side most of the time, closer to like what a circle change looks like. But Bryce's goes either way. It's very vertical and not much horizontal. But if you look at where that pitch, like what it looked like throughout the year, some would run arm side, some would go basically straight down, and some would run glove side a little bit, which is just, that's really interesting, and I don't exactly know why. I'm sure someone knows, but really interesting pitch. Just a little bit different every time he threw it, I felt like, but it got a lot of vertical movement on it. It was a beautiful pitch, worked really well for him. And then he threw a cutter this year as well. His cutter was the least used pitch consistently all year. He threw it all year, but used it the least out of any of his pitchers. I still, like I said with Logan, it still provided value even though you're not throwing it very much. He'd throw less of them than Logan. Like, Bryce would throw a couple of them a game, but it just gives hitters a different look, and I feel like it adds to his just having a bunch of pitchers, keeping guys off balance type of vibe that he gets going up there. And his breaking pitch arsenal went through quite the makeover. He has a slider and a sweeper that he carried over from last year. Both were, like, fine, definitely needed work. I think there's plenty of improvement for that slider still heading into next season. And I think maybe with the emergence of his knuckle curve, just scrap the sweeper altogether, but maybe he doesn't. I'm not an expert here. Who knows what he's going to do? What really made the difference, again, is that knuckle curve. He added it on June 29th, and that just completely changed his season. He wasn't having a bad season up until that point, but there was something. There was something missing, and it was the knuckle curve. He started throwing that pitch, and then he had seven different ways to attack hitters for three straight months, and he was awesome. He finished the year slowly but surely throwing less fastballs every start, four-seam and sinker. He threw less sweepers in place of the knuckle curve and threw a little bit more splitter as well. So he got a lot more off speed and breaking in the second half of the year and a little less fastball, four-seam and sinker. So I loved it. I loved it. So many pitches. It was super effective. I'm a fan of a guy who throws a lot of pitches like this and mixes it up. I've talked about my admiration for Yu Darvish and how much I love him because he throws a million pitches. But Bryce was awesome. I mean, from June 29th on, when he added that knuckle curve, he put up a 1.94 ERA, which was fourth among qualified starters in that span. And 2.1 of his 2.8 season-long F4 came in those 3 months. He was just so good at keeping hitters guessing. He got a lot of ground balls in that span too. And it's a credit to both him and Cal for the sequencing that they came up and gave us each and every game, and it just works so well. Can't go without saying, though, he did have a 2.96 FIP over that span too, because he doesn't get a lot of whiffs, which is a concern a little bit. Definitely got some batted ball luck, but still, that's still an insanely good FIP even over that time period. So overall, awesome season for Bryce in just year two. I think the only thing I'd want to see from him is either and or, you know, either a dip in the hard hit rate and the barrels he gives up, because that is just something that hurt him at times this year, definitely in his rookie year. And then improvement in the whiff department. You could do both. You could do one or the other. He could improve the whiffs and still give up a decent amount of hard hits, and he'd be fine. But I think sky is the limit for this dude. First full season, surpassed all expectations, really. And I'm just super excited to see what kind of like tinkering he does in the offseason, because I know he will. I'm excited for all these guys to report to camp in like February when pitchers and catchers report, because then we'll get tweets from Ryan Divish and the other beat writers like, hey, look, he added a running fastball to his arsenal or something crazy like that. But let's get to the last member of the rotation. Last but certainly not least, the youngest of the bunch, shout out to being 24 years old, Brian Wu. Very bizarre start to his sophomore season. Not even start, very bizarre half the season for his sophomore season. Like, started the year on the IL with an elbow issue, and that's never what you want. Everyone was worried for a long time, just kind of waiting to hear more. And he didn't end up pitching at all in the year until May 10th, and he made his first start. And you know, if you just looked at his game logs, you'd guess that he was like fully healthy based on those innings. If you just look at the game logs and the innings and the counting numbers besides the pitch count, you'd be like, oh yeah, no, he was pretty good and he was healthy. But that's just obviously not the case. You know this. You watch Brian Wu. Here are his May starts. 4.1 innings in his first one. Makes sense. You know, first start since he was reinstated from the IL. Yeah. And then he went 5.1, and then in his next three starts in May, he went 6 innings flat in each of those three. And you look at that, and you're like, yeah, that's great. He was probably throwing, you know, 80-plus, 90-plus pitches in those, you know, healthy, going deep in the games, but they don't want him to go too deep. But in those four starts, after his first one in May, he threw 79, 77, 70, and 66 pitches. He kept leaving on a low pitch count, because they were trying to protect him, and it felt like every other game or something, he felt tightness in his elbow or something of the sort, but then he'd come out and make the next start and then not throw that many pitches. Just bizarre. Gets to June. He makes one start in June, and then he gets one start in June, and then he hurts his elbow again. And then for the rest of June, he's okay. He hurt his hamstring briefly in between all of this as well, but that didn't affect him too much. For the rest of his June and July starts, he did not exceed 73 pitches. There was the elbow. There was potential forearm problems. There was the potential hamstring problems. He was having all sorts of problems. And shoving every time he went out, but for 70 pitches. It wasn't until August that he started going deeper into games and throwing like 85-plus pitches per start. And he was awesome in the month of August. And then in September, he got touched up pretty badly. But I think we all kind of expected that was coming. He was rocking like a 2-3 ERA heading into September with a 3-4 FIP. So I think there was some obvious regression in the mean coming in that month. And it did, but he was still really solid. Luckily, all year, the team didn't really need him that badly. They had the other four guys to pick up the slack, and they definitely did. And Hancock, I thought, filled in admirably, especially like early on, he was fine. And then, I mean, I'll talk about Hancock briefly later, filled in for Luis in September and looked pretty decent. But Brian Wu, he only ended up throwing 121 third innings this year, still more than 87 and two thirds last season. But he just got to those 121 in a very touch-and-go type of way. But his 2.89 ERA, awesome. 3.4 FIP to go along with it, also great. Like, he lived in the strike zone. He only walked 2.8% of the batters he faced. That's George Kirby type of numbers. His strikeout numbers were not quite as high as maybe we want, but I think next season is when we should see him lean a little bit more on his off-speed breaking stuff and hopefully get more strikeouts. He limited hard contact super well, too. Despite living in the strike zone a lot, he really didn't give up hard contact that much for how much his fastball is in the zone, but it's because that fastball is just special. It's special in a different way than Bryce Miller, but it's, I think it's even better. It's better than Bryce Miller's fastball. It's one of the best fastballs in the sport at the moment. I've talked about it many times. Love the shape on it, and it comes off his arm angle like really low, rides through the zone in the dead zone. He gets a lot of induced vertical break on that pitch. It's wonderful. It's beautiful. That's his bread and butter. It works so nicely. I love the pitch. He put up 2.3 Fangraphs WAR and 2.4 Baseball Reference WAR this year in 121 and a third innings. That is sublime. That's great. And then compared to what we saw in his rookie season, his arsenal was pretty similar. There weren't a lot of changes here. Still a lot of four-seamer and sinker usage, and both pitches worked pretty well together this offseason. I thought the sinker really came along this year. That pitch really impressed me. I think he improved it a lot. I think his slider definitely has work to do. I don't know if his changeup should even remain in his arsenal. Maybe it does. It makes sense for him to throw a changeup just with his delivery and his arm angle, and he gets a lot of just arm side run on his pitches in general, so the changeup does make sense in my mind. Maybe he doesn't need to throw the changeup because it just wasn't super effective. Maybe a splitter. Like, I've comped him to Joe Ryan in the past this year at some point. Similar release point and similar fastballs that don't have elite velocity but have a lot of induced vertical break and just come in at the right, like, they come in on a flat plane through the zone because of their arm angle, and they're super effective without having to be, like, really high velocity. They're similar, and Joe Ryan throws a really nice splitter that gets arm side run. Maybe it's that Brian needs to adopt instead of the changeup. I don't know. He's 24. He's thrown 200-ish career innings. He's got one of the best fastballs already in baseball. He'll be fine. Maybe changeup, last thing about the changeup, maybe he just needs to never throw it to right-handers at all. Maybe he needs to have that be a low usage pitch only to lefties, but whatever. I do like his slider. Like the rest of the staff, it's like a gyro slider, basically. A lot of vertical, not a lot of horizontal movement. It looks like a cutter. I kept thinking a lot of this year he was throwing a cutter, but StatCast tells me it's not. StatCast says it's a slider. Maybe if he just cuts that, maybe if he that just becomes a cut fastball officially, maybe he throws it a little bit harder and it's just a cutter. Maybe that would be more useful than his current slider. He keeps the sweeper, keeps the changeup or splitter, and then throws three different fastballs. That would give him three fastballs all moved differently, with the four-seam, the two-seam, and the cutter, and then a solid sweeper, potentially good changeup and or splitter and for left-handers. You know, I don't know. His potential, though, again, through the roof. Through the roof. I've talked about Brian Wu a lot. I like Bryce Miller, but I think Wu has an even higher ceiling, to be quite honest. I'm a little worried about his elbow. I'm a little worried that it was barking. Seemed to not really be an issue later in the year, but that's always going to be in the back of everyone's mind when you're watching a young starting pitcher, right? He did have surgery in college already, but that doesn't exclude you from getting more surgery. So still a concern, but that is, I need to talk about the freaking bullpen for half an hour, but that is the starters. I don't really need to really talk about Jonathan Diaz. I'm not going to. Emerson Hancock was the only other guy who started games for them this season. And just briefly, I did like what I saw from him in September. I think he's got a good case to just be a back of the rotation starter for most MLB teams right now. Just sucks for him that he's the sixth guy on the depth chart for a rotation as healthy and as talented as the Mariners have been. So maybe they trade him, maybe they trade another starter, promote Emerson to be the full-time fifth starter. Plenty of options. I just think he's better than AAA right now and needs MLB reps to improve. So we'll see where they go with that. But that's it for the starters. Overall, just an enjoyable staff, just an enjoyable rotation to watch. Maybe the most fun I've had watching a entire pitching staff just cook the whole year. I wish the offense could have scored more because Like, how many times do we look up as one of our starters was dealing only to be tied at 1-1 or winning 1-0 or losing 2-1 or something? That made me a little sour on the starters, but it wasn't their fault. They deserve better. We deserve to see them in the playoffs. They deserve to pitch in the playoffs, but life isn't fair. My only dread moment in my head right now is the fact that for now two straight seasons, we've gotten some really healthy and really productive years from the rotation, and these guys are not getting any younger, and I worry about that. I worry that these two really healthy and productive rotational years wasted will come back to haunt us when next year, let's say the offense is like, maybe it's closer to league average, slightly above league average for the whole season next year. But then, you know, things happen to starting pitchers is all I'm saying. That's what I'm worried about. I'm not going to say it, but I just said life isn't fair. Life isn't fair, especially for Mariners fans. So we'll see. I loved all five of these starters. Nothing really that bad to say about them, honestly. Phenomenal stuff. But let's move on to the bullpen. I will now call to the pen. I mentioned bullpen stats earlier a little bit, just like ERAs, FIPs. The most important bullpen stats are just kind of the raw ERA. I mean, again, regardless of what the FIP or even the Sierras look like, the ERA is what runs actually crossed the plate at the end of the day. And this bullpen was not quite as elite as we've seen in years past, but they still ended up having a good bullpen this year. I talked about this last month. They ended up ninth in ERA in MLB and were pretty effective most of the year as far as bullpens go. Bullpens always blow games. It's inevitable. The best bullpens obviously don't do that as much, but also the best teams don't put as much stress on their bullpen as the Mariners do, and I think they're one of the leading contending teams that really puts a lot of stress on their bullpen in terms of just conjuring up high leverage innings for them because of the lack of offense. We got so accustomed to having a top tier bullpen production in recent years, I'd say. That's definitely goes hand in hand with like the organizational strength of developing the pitching staff. Goes right into the bullpen. They've been pretty damn good about, again, adopting a modern way of scouting and developing and molding bullpen arms as well. And they've just been really good about taking opportunities of guys like off the scrap heap, and some don't work out, some do work out. They clearly have a way of targeting guys that they might want to work for the bullpen, and it's worked really well for them. And then there's also just a mix of like proven elite guys like Andrés Muñoz and Matt Brash, who we didn't see this year, but it's a good mix when you have just kind of a mix of a bunch of cheap guys with your like bread and butter. Like, yeah, everyone kind of knows Andrés Muñoz is that dude when he is pitching, right? A lot had to do with the bullpen being not as good this year. I'd say still probably top 10 bullpen in baseball, just by ERA, and I'm just going to go by ERA. A top half bullpen, at least this year, in baseball. I think a lot of them not being like a top 5 bullpen had to do with Matt Brash being out for the year. That was a gut punch. I mean, he threw the most innings and appeared in the most games out of the pen than any pitcher in baseball last year. I think he threw like 73 innings, maybe, which is brutal. You're missing volume and elite pitching for Matt Brash out of the bullpen. It's not like he was just a one-inning guy. You have the luxury of throwing him multiple innings and throwing him a lot or at least maybe they so thought. I think that probably contributed a little bit to why he missed this year, is the fact that he was so heavily used last year. But that was obviously a key contributing factor in them not having a great bullpen, especially for a lot of the start of the season. And then obviously the other guy who was hurt most of the year, Gregory Santos, a really like shocking but great acquisition this offseason, just barely pitched. 7 1/3 innings. In those 7 1/3, you saw, I think everyone saw the stuff, even in that it was probably a little down just because he was hurt. He was coming off being hurt and then clearly got hurt again. The stuff looked nasty, and when he is fully healthy, he has some of the best just raw stuff in all of baseball, so it's a real shame that he ended up not contributing at all to this bullpen this season. That would have been mighty helpful. Hopefully next year he'll be back along with Matt Brash next season, because they kind of need that. They need more than just Munoz, and like maybe Colin Snyder comes back and is great again next year. And I'll talk about some other guys who might be back, but they need those three, and they could have really used them this year, because I said the bullpen blew a lot of games. They didn't blow a lot of like terrible games. Like, they didn't have a bunch of bullpen implosions. I think there was definitely some bullpen management issues this year, but I think that was just the nature of them not being super confident in any of the arms for most of the season outside of Andrés Muñoz. So I think Scott and the rest of the coaching staff and the front office in general was put in a kind of a tough spot there, just with the injuries that happened. I mean, Gabe Spire as well, who was phenomenal last year, was disappointing and hurt for all of this season as well. Like, when he pitched, he struck out a lot of guys, but he was wild. Like, he could not find the strike zone this year, and he was hurt a lot of the year too, pitched a lot in AAA. Just not a, and that's your main, that was like your main guy against lefties. Like, Tyler Saucedo was great this year. Ended up being good. I think he had some rocky times there, but he was basically just as effective this year as last. But they needed Spire too. They really did. And the other issues beyond like the injuries, I think were just felt like typical bullpen volatility. You know, like year over year, it's hard to just bank on having a great bullpen every year, because it's so volatile in terms of both like there's small samples for all these guys, and also just relievers, man. It just, sometimes they implode. I talked about it last month. They kind of got it together in September, but it was a little too late at that point. So, but real quick, I'm not going to talk about these guys as much as the starters, but just like, obviously Andrés Muñoz, a great year. I mean, awesome. Awesome. Love watching him pitch. He had somewhat of a shaky start to the year, like ever so slightly, but he settled in super quickly. Didn't look back. He's just so good. His fastball, as we know, is awesome. One of the fastest balls in the league. And his slider really is still his pitch, man. That thing is wicked. He threw 59 1/3 innings this year with a 2.12 ERA, a 3.35 FIP. But I'm going to use Sierra a little bit more when I'm talking about relief pitchers. With Munoz specifically, I do prefer that over FIP for relievers, because it takes into quality of contact more than other ERA estimators. And Munoz had a 2.94 FIPs, Sierra. So a little bit better than his FIP. I think this is verifiably a very, very good year for him, and just a solid year all around. And that 2.12 ERA, seventh lowest mark in Mariners history from a reliever who threw more than 55 innings. Just, you know, great year. Kept them in it a lot of the year, and really worked a lot. For a good portion of this year, there were a lot of 4 and 5 out saves that he had to get this year. And not much change really about the way he went about it. He was almost 50% slider, and then like 30% four seam, 20% sinker. He was in the 95th percentile in K percentage, the 99th percentile in whiff percentage, 91st percentile in chase rate, 98th percentile in fastball velocity, 87th percentile in hard hit rate. just not a whole lot else to say besides I love watching him, and I'm just upset that we've more or less wasted the last 2 years of him as a closer. For winning purposes, for personal enjoyment purposes, it's been a great last 2 years to watch him cook like this. But he, like, this rotation, and all you really need, and that's what was tough about this September, is they got it together. Munoz was still at the back of the bullpen. Colin Snyder was awesome. Troy Taylor looked great. And those three guys kind of looked like they could have taken you through the postseason with, like, probably one or two of your starters pitching relief innings as well. Like, it looked like they were very set up to be fine in October from a bullpen perspective, because you really just ride your three best guys in that pen the entire way when you have them. And then starters in relief, which they could have also had. So it was extra tough that they just ended up missing the playoffs this year. We didn't get to see that specifically either. So that was pretty unfortunate. But who else? I do want to talk about Trent Thornton. I'll talk about everyone. Trent Thornton threw 72 and a third innings this year with a 3.61 ERA, 3.47 FIP. What is his Sierra looking like? I had it in front of me a second ago. 3.2 Sierra. Yeah, that's right. A lot of weak contact from this guy. He's Mr. Spin. This is just one of those classic modern bullpen successes. They picked him up. He had a shit ton of spin on both of it. He throws a sweeper and a slider. And that just works really well for him. Overall, he pitched, 72 and a third innings. That is right where Matt Brash was last year. That is a super solid year from him. He's one of the relievers that's up for potential non-tendering, just because he'll be like $1.5 million, $2 million next year. I think it's worth keeping him. Volume alone, if he can do anything close to that next year, be great. But we'll see what they end up doing with him. And then Colin Snyder. Colin Snyder is the pitching lab success story of the season, I think. 41 and two-thirds innings. Felt like he was in the doghouse there for a little bit. Like, he looked good in his outings, but he wasn't getting much. And then way later in the year, I think everyone realized, he's actually verifiably, like, very good. 41 and two-thirds innings, 1.94 ERA, 3.41 FIP, and then his Sierra was, where is it? I'm losing the Sierras in the sheet that is in front of me. 3.22 Sierra. And he struck out 28% of the guys he faced. He didn't walk a whole lot of guys. Threw a lot of strikes. Really, really successful year from Colin Snyder out of nowhere. Out of nowhere. And it was huge for this pen down the stretch. Massive. He was probably the second guy after Munoz that Dan Wilson would call on in a high leverage situation. So pretty wild that we got there as Colin Snyder, but he'll definitely, I think, be back in the bullpen next year as just probably the main middle relief guy, I'd guess. But looking forward to that. Some of the rest of these guys, I think I'm going to do a little pre-offseason pod too and go over the non-tender candidates, because most of their bullpen is up for arbitration. Trent Thornton is, I think Saucedo is, Spire is, who else is, I think Austin Voth is up for arbitration too. I think Chargois as well. I don't think they're going to hold on to all those guys if they are as cheap as they appear. Like, all of those guys, I think, are between $1 and $3 million, which is pretty typical for, like, reliever arbitration, especially for ones who are useful, which most of these guys are pretty useful. But some of that value absolutely comes from them being on a minimum contract, as much as I personally don't care. I'd pay relievers whatever. It does matter to a team to get value out of their relievers. And, when you have Santos, you're going to pay a lot. I think Brash, obviously, they're going to hold on to and see what they get from him whenever he comes back next year. And then Munoz, those are your top guys making the most money. And then maybe they add more money to the bullpen in the offseason via trade or some minor free agent signings, which, I mean, they always, I feel like they always sign like a reliever, at least one that they like. Saucedo as well up for arbitration. I think like half of those guys are going to be gone. I don't think they hold on to Saucedo or Spire, like both. I think they probably keep one of them as a lefty, but whatever. I'll get into that in a different pod, but I'm not going to focus too heavily on what a lot of these other guys did. I mean, Austin Voth, I think, was a super useful guy, somewhat bull guy. He pitched too many high leverage innings just out of pure necessity this year out of the pen. I mean, he pitched 61 innings. That's a lot. And appeared in 68 games. So he was the second most used reliever after Trent Thornton. And he had just a solid year. I mean, he didn't light the stat sheet on fire. 3.69 ERA, 4.12 FIP, which is but his Sierra was 3.51, and that, if you just look at the pure numbers, he was really, really good. Really, really good at limiting hard contact. He got a lot of whiff and a lot of chase, but not a particularly elite strikeout rate, but he didn't walk a lot of guys either. And he had one of the best hard hit rates of any reliever in the league. He got similar to kind of how I've talked about this pitching staff on this episode. He got a decent amount of fly balls. He's not a ground ball guy, like type of FIP guy like that. He throws cutter, four seamer, sweeper mainly, and a curveball, which I'm not as big of a fan of curveball. But his cutter is nice. I like his fastball. His fastball is deceptively good for how not hard he throws it. But he gets a lot of just weak fly balls. A lot of weak contact, and that is for sure useful as like a bulkier middle relief guy, but I think he just pitched probably a little bit too many high leverage innings this year. I mean, I saw him blow the game at Angel Stadium this year. That was unfortunate. But overall, I think he contributed plenty to this pen. I think he could totally be back next year. I don't know. I'm going to have to really take a look at the non-tender candidates and figure it out. Tyler Saucedo was fine. He just didn't pitch a lot. Like 38 innings this year, 53 games he appeared in. Like that is a lot. Technically, it's just less than he did last year, less bulk. And he just wasn't quite as effective. And the underlying numbers don't look quite as nice for him. So I don't know. I don't know if they hold on to him at all. Chargois was really good. I talked about him as well, similar to how I spoke to Justin Turner and Randy in the other podcast. Chargois was good. I already kind of talked about what he's done for the team. I think he's probably going to be back next year. Really nice ERA. FIP is definitely a good bit higher than his ERA. I think he got a little bit lucky with his outcomes, but similar to both, didn't give up a whole lot of hard contact and could fill that Voth role, maybe, if they don't hold on to him as just kind of a bulkier middle relief guy, and I don't hate that. And then, I mean, they had so many other guys that they shipped out or cut or whatever. Like Mike Bauman threw 16 innings with his team. Tyson Miller, who I think everyone loved before they traded him, threw 11 innings. I still am so iffy on that trade because I like Tyson Miller a lot. Kirby Snead threw 10 innings for the Mariners this year. I mean, Jimmy Garcia, we've talked about him. Don't need to talk about him right now. Jonathan Diaz, Brett DeGue. Yes, you know who I'm talking about. Jonathan Hernandez, Josh Rojas, two innings out of the pen. And then the most important name on here is Leo Rivas, two innings out of the pen, a zero ERA. A zero ERA, averaging 46 miles an hour on his fastball. Just an elite relief pitcher this year. No blemishes on his pitching resume. But no, the guy I really wanted to finish on. Wow, phrasing. Jesus. The guy I wanted to finish with, still kind of phrasing, Troy Taylor. Troy Taylor pitched 19 and a third innings for this team this year, and he was really impressive. He's a guy who's been in the pen before. I think I've probably talked about him on a minor league podcast before in years past as like an just he's just been kind of steadily him and like Travis Kuhn, I feel like, have been in Double-A together on this team for a while, just being effective relief pitchers. Being a relief pitcher in this era of relief pitchers is kind of is kind of good and bad. I think you're offered a lot more opportunities. But now there's so many relief pitchers in the minors because they're more in demand. I think it's harder to stand out unless you are like elite. Like I think Edwin Diaz in Double A going straight from Double A to the bigs. There's guys who are like potential 70 grade relievers, but there's not very many of them. I think Troy Taylor and even like Travis Kuhn and a lot of other guys in their system who've just kind of been chugging along in this pitching development apparatus for a little while now, getting better and better, can all kind of provide solid options out of the pen. But Troy Taylor clearly was the best of the bunch. I mean, in 19 and the third innings, he had a 3.72 ERA, 4.36 FIP. Those raw numbers aren't amazing. Sierra was 3.01, though, so pretty significantly lower than both those numbers. Really small sample, even for a reliever, for a guy who can definitely throw more innings than that. But his raw numbers were good. His fastball velocity looked great. He struck out almost 31% of the batters he faced. That's about 11.5 Ks per nine. His stuff just in general looked good. I really liked his delivery quite a bit. He's just kind of a typical modern four-seam fastball sweeper reliever, but his stuff looks good enough on those pitches to just kind of ride those. I know he has a changeup too, but I don't think he's gonna really throw it too much. Maybe he will next year. We'll see. I think they got enough innings out of him in the bigs to kind of make informed enough decisions on what he should do with his pitches moving forward. But he averaged he averaged 97 on the fastball, and the sweeper looked good. I think the sweeper had plenty of vertical drop. It fit kind of the mold more of this organization. It wasn't a huge horizontal sweeper. It was pretty league average in terms of horizontal break, but vertical, it was very nice. It was a very nice vertically moving sweeper. I really like where his arm angle is coming at. It's kind of just a lower-ish arm angle. I like the delivery. I think overall eye test wise, he just looked like a big league reliever who could absolutely handle himself. So I think no matter what, he's obviously not up for non-tendering or anything. He just made his debut. He'll be on a rookie contract for a couple seasons. I think he's 100% going to break camp in the pen, barring any injuries at all. I think he's going to obviously get an invite to spring training, but I feel like the organization, the coaching staff, probably right now have him in a pretty solid role. I mean, I'd hope he would be like the fourth or fifth leverage guy. If Santos is healthy at the start of the year, Munoz healthy at the start of the year, and then Colin Snyder probably is back and probably deserves to be a little bit more high leverage than him. And then Brash won't be back probably till the middle of the year. And then maybe they sign another lefty who can handle leverage innings from that angle, or maybe they keep believing in Gabe Spire, but we'll see. I really like Troy Taylor. I think everyone watching him realized, like, yeah, no, he just looks good. So I'm encouraged to watch him next year, and I think they just have another just kind of really solid relief option that they have built internally, so that's useful. And that is it for the relief pitchers. I think I named all the relievers who threw innings for this team this year. I don't know if I mentioned Cody Bolton. Cody Bolton, early on, him and Colin Snyder couldn't tell them apart. You could have put their faces right next to each other, and I wouldn't have picked them out. And then by the end of the season, obviously, Colin Snyder had emerged as the guy. And Ryan Stanek, too, who's still pitching, who is throwing really important innings for the New York Metropolitans right now, which is hilarious. I think he's just such a typical reliever. I mean, he threw 39 innings for this team. He was one of the guys early on in the year, and really he wasn't great. I think he had the year that people could guess he had. It's one of his outcomes. He's just a guy who throws really hard fastball, gives up a lot of it's a lot of home run potential out of him, and has really long hair and kind of has a fuck you attitude. He's kind of the perfect relief pitcher in a way, and that's also why he had a 4.38 ERA for the Mariners in 39 innings, because in those 39 innings, he totally could have posted like a 2.5, just blowing guys away. But then you get a couple outings where you give up a home run here, a home run there. You walk guys here and there. Like, it can go downhill quick for just a relief pitcher like Stanek. And it kind of did, and they shipped him out. Oh, also, Edward Bizzardo. I don't think I talked about him. Bizzardo, I continue to ride hard for Edward Bizzardo. He just hasn't quite earned a spot to throw meaningful innings for this team. He threw a lot in September when they just simply needed the innings, and the roster's expanded as well. And again, I just like watching him pitch. I don't know what it is. Sometimes guys just speak to me, and I still don't really know if he's good. I thought in last year's offseason, I thought he was going to be like a key member of this rotation, or not rotation, bullpen this year. I really did think that. and he wasn't. Obviously, he wasn't. We know he wasn't. But I just like how his pitches look, and I think he's a talented pitcher. I really hope he pitches more for this team and is good next year. I mean, in the 27 and two-thirds innings he pitched for this year, and that was in 23 games, so they were just trying to get as many innings out of him as possible, because that's just what the team needed. He had a 4.88 ERA. That's really high. His expected ERA was 2.34. His FIP was 2.7. And his Sierra was 2.81. And he struck out 30.6 guys that he faced, only walked 8.3. I mean, his peripherals way outperformed his raw ERA. And I just like watching him pitch, and I wanted to mention him because I hope he's good. I hope he's good. Slider, sinker, fastball. Mixes in a splitter in there, which is pretty fun with his delivery. So that is who I'll end on, is Bizzardo. And my hope is that we see him more and he becomes a good middle reliever for this team, because I just simply like the guy. But I gotta end it here. This is about where I ended the hitting one. Thank you so much for listening. I will be back at some point in the future. I think the next episode is going to be the minor league episode, but I hope you enjoyed my roundup of the position players and the pitchers from the 2024 Seattle Mariners, and we'll officially really close the book on the season now. We'll look forward to the offseason, and yeah, keep an eye out for more podcasts. It's going to be less, there's going to be less of a schedule like last offseason. It's not going to be like every Friday like I've been tried to kind of do during the season. It's going to be less schedule based on, and it just kind of determines what the team does. But for the early parts of the offseason, there will be some more structure to these podcasts. So keep an eye out for those. But appreciate you listening. And of course, have a great rest of your week. And on to the 2025 offseason.